Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Right, we got Steve Silva.
How you doing?
We got producer Zach.
Howdy ho.
And we got me, your host, Sean Robertson. Together we are your Weekly Dose podcast. And as always, we're streaming to you live from Orange County, California.
Every Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. Sunday.
Hey, thank you for joining us this week. Hey, homage to our favorite radio guys, Mark and Brian, with, of course, the hopes of getting them into the Radio Hall of Fame. Have you voted?
Oh, I voted.
I voted. Yeah, for those who recently followed us, thank you for joining our family. It's always good to have new people.
Absolutely. It seems like our family here on Your Weekly Dose keeps growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And we really appreciate that, all you guys who do listen to our show. It's going to be a really cool, fun show today. Of course, today's theme is Man on the Moon by REM in honor of the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon. I don't care what anybody else says. We landed, damn it.
We did.
So,
and the Earth is round, not flat.
Have you any other REM songs that you really like? Or
Yeah, I like REM.
You like REM?
A song name isn't popping into my head immediately.
But there's a few.
There's actually another one that's associated with this one called The Great Beyond. REM, they did two songs
about
for the movie Man on the Moon.
Okay.
For the movie Man on the Moon. So you got this one and The Great Beyond, which is also part of that soundtrack.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I like that one.
Yeah. Well, REM, Great Beyond. So we're playing, that's our theme today, Man on the Moon, of course. We got some cool things. We'll be talking about the Apollo 11 landing. We got some lollipop facts.
Ooh.
It's also National Lollipop Day. Yeah, there you go. And we got a wonderful Mark and Brian past moment for you when they went to the moon. And also on the show today, returning our friend, becoming a really good friend of the program, Mr. Mark Bonilla. So, yeah, can't wait because he's got a brand new album out. And I know you guys haven't listened to it. I have. Wonderful, wonderful album. I mean, this is an incredible album. You got to go out and get it. So that's what we got going on for you guys today.
Well, now, don't forget, you can react with the show and comment. comment on our website, GuiggyDose.com. Find us at Twitter, Instagram, at Your Weekly Dose 1, and find us on Facebook, or email us at Your Weekly Dose 1 at gmail.com.
And don't forget, not only can you download the show for free from our website, but you can also go and subscribe to the show through iTunes, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio, just to name a few things. Just search for Your Weekly Dose, and most importantly, do not forget to rate and review the show as well, because your reviews definitely count for us. And of course, if you enjoyed Mark and Brian, you're enjoying our show, and we had a couple of great reviews so far, and just keep them coming. We really do appreciate it.
Now, as always, we need to give a shout out to our sponsor, Ooh. Amazon, because without them, we could not do this show for all of you. They have been with us since day one.
And they haven't kicked us off yet, which is a good thing. Ooh. Like they did with Mark. So, there's no better place to go shopping than Amazon. They've got everything you need. So, get what you want by shopping on Amazon. Matter of fact, we just got Roman a brand new wireless speaker thing just recently.
That the international the wireless, symbol for wireless speaker thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, with the dials.
I know what that is.
Yes, exactly.
Checking the bathroom.
Checking the bathroom water, yeah. But we just got a brand new one for him because his little blue one that he listens with his iPod at night and everything, you know, it's connected via Bluetooth, went out.
Right.
And so he had to get it.
Never came back.
Never came back. It just hurt. Yeah. And
funny that way.
So he got himself a brand new one and everything. So again, you can find anything on Amazon. So all you need to do is go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on our Amazon banner, and bookmark it. That's the most important thing, because that way, every time you want to shop on Amazon, you use the bookmark link, and by doing so, once again, you help the show stay on the air.
Zach, do you like crowds?
Crowds of women.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Do you like crowds?
Of women.
Well, the three of us are in agreement.
Yes.
But when we're shopping...
Oh, then no.
We'd rather not face a lot of crowds.
Well, I ain't going to hold the purse anymore.
Well, that's true. Well, of course, Amazon has everything, and it's the summer, and I've come across something I think is really cool.
What'd you find this time, Steve?
Well, this is something you can take, like, to the river. Or if you're going to lakes or somewhere or Disneyland.
Wow.
I was thinking Yosemite and it came out Disneyland.
Freudian slip, huh?
It sure is. God, I love Yosemite. Anyway, they have a thing called the, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I think it's called the Floozle Tube. I don't think fluzzle makes sense. So Floozle Tube 2.0 River Floaties.
By Dr. Seuss?
Yes. I do not like it in a tube. I do not like it with a lube. Okay, these are durable inner tubes for floating, and best for the lake and the river floats. They're puzzle tubes.
Puzzle tubes?
You've got the round, regular tube you can sit in, and then they've got four appendages sticking out.
Hello.
Two of them are male, and two of them are
female.
Uh-huh. So you can lock these things together like a big puzzle.
So you can make like a chain.
Yeah, or a chain, or here's a picture of them in a pool.
Okay, yeah, okay. So
you can lock them up any way you want other, and you all stay together. You float around.
See, they need
until you go down the river.
Well, I was going to say, not only that, but they need that, like at the Lazy River over at, was it Not Soak City or Wild Rivers or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they need. So that way they interlock together.
So we can match everybody. Chain and fill up the entire river with a continuous chain.
That'd be a fun, like Aqua Twister. Okay. Everyone, write the person green, and you have to climb over to the green one.
Oh, yeah.
And make sure it's the right person.
Yeah.
So that really looks like fun.
Well, that definitely looks cool. Well, if you're going to do all your shopping online, just make sure there's only one place to go. Yes, it's yourweeklydose.com. That way you can use our Amazon banner to get the job done.
And remember, when you use our Amazon banner, you help support the show. Amazon, work hard, have fun. Make history.
And of course, if you're doing some more barbecuing, you know, for the summer and everything, because we're in the middle of summer right now. Summer is almost over. August is around the corner, dude.
Mm-hmm.
How scary is that?
Right around what, a week and a half?
Anyway, all your propane needs, simple. Go to one place only in Orange County. That is Western Propane Services. You want to talk to Dan Burkhart. He is the president and CEO over there. Really nice guys. They helped us out an awful lot for our 4th of July barbecue when they got us all the, our propane needs. And if you want more information on them, simply go to GassyDan.com.
And if you know anything about Dan,
he's gassy.
He's gassy.
He's full of gas. Exactly. Full of gas. Let's try it again. He's full of gas.
Yeah.
Full of gas. Let's try it one more time.
Oh.
Full of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Gas. There you go. All right. All right.
Poor Zach.
I'm thinking gas. I'm thinking gas, like actual gas, like that comes from a machine, not from the internal system of a human body.
It over. Well, his theme song.
Either way, it's flammable.
His theme song should be do 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 gas man.
That could work.
There you go.
Wow, that sounded wet.
Go see Dan for all your gaseous needs.
There you go. Exactly. All right. What time?
Where do we go from here?
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Mark and Brian, got to talk about this. We thought we only had one day to do this and get this done. Turns out we have 2 weeks to do this.
Whoa.
So.
You can still do it.
Anybody listening to my voice, I know you guys are out there. You enjoy the show. We see the downloads. Talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to your neighbor's dog. I don't care who. Make sure you guys vote. We have up until July 28th to get these guys in. And that is Mark and Brian into the Radio Hall of Fame. What you need to do, there's two ways to vote. You can go online and go to radiovote.com and you enter your email. Now, keep in mind, you cannot, I repeat, you cannot put your email again and vote a second time. It will deny you from doing that.
Denied.
So, but if you do have multiple email accounts, all different names and everything, do each one. That's no problem at all. I did that with all of my business emails and personal emails and my work email and everything. So that's totally fine. I got to vote seven times, so which is great.
Jesus, you have that many emails?
I do, yeah.
Lord.
So, again, go to radiovote.com, enter your email, scroll down. It's going to ask to submit, and then scroll down for Mark and Brian, of course, and then you're going to submit it twice there to make sure that's who you want to vote for, and it's over, it's done, it's simple as that. Now, you can also vote a second way, though, too, which does count. Send, basically, you can do it via text. What you do is you send the number that corresponds with your chosen personality. For Mark and Brian, I believe it's number 30. Can we double check on that?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is number 30. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. So you text to 877-37-VOTE or 877-370-8683 and text the number 30. Again, you can only do this for one line only. So I know most of us only have one cell phone. And that's fine. But if your wife or husband, kids got cell phones, tell them to vote for Mark and Brian on their cell phones. That way it'll count. And as simple as that. So you can vote twice on it. And it's simple as that. And I don't know. I haven't heard the stats yet from Laura or anything of where we're going with it. But my understanding, the results will not be, I believe, until August 5th. Somewhere in there, we'll find out. So that's the way to vote for them. In the meantime, we got a wonderful bit for you guys here. This was done about 10 years ago because this was for the 40th anniversary of the Apollo landing. And Mark and Brian decided to go to the moon themselves, which I thought, how are these guys going to get to the moon?
I know.
You know, I mean, granted, they made some good money at KLOS. They were number one. That's you true. Know, but I didn't realize they had that much money to go to the moon. So here we are from 10 years ago, Mark and Brian going to the moon.
It's time for us to go to the moon.
We're going to go to the moon, y'all.
We're going to go to the moon right now.
40 years ago today, man first stepped foot on the moon. So we're celebrating that with a trip of our own. Danny, where are you going?
Door.
All right, you're going to be over here?
I'm here.
Now, before, well, first, let's open the door to the capsule and climb in the capsule.
Right? All right.
Okay.
That was the door to the capsule right there.
Gotta climb in, get strapped up here.
All right. Now we're inside the capsule. And it's, we, you know what, we can't do anything until there's a name check to make sure that technically speaking, we are good to go.
Check with the ground crew. Here we go.
Here we go.
Name check. Harry Royce. Secure.
Mary Royce. Secure.
Hi, Mary.
Ann Anderson. Secure.
What's up, man?
Major John Perdue. Secure. Bob Finelli. Secure.
Lieutenant James Calder. Secure.
Astronaut / moonwalker. Mark Thompson. I'm secure. Astronaut Bradfield. Pretty secure.
Danny, secure.
Terrible.
Engineer Frank Sontag, secure.
Back here, a little bit envious, but secure. Kelly Gates.
Dead secure.
Clear.
Clear.
All right. We're prepared now for countdown. Got a countdown.
29 seconds.
29 seconds.
Dow's locked. ES reduced for launch.
Roger. 25 seconds.
Status check.
Go Atlas.
Go Centaur.
Go Mars.
Go Space Shuttle. Space Capsule.
Go
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7.
It's really fast.
6, 5, 4, 3.
You ready?
2.
Yeah, I'm ready. You ready?
I'm ready.
0. Ignition. Liftoff.
Starting to calm down now.
Whoa, man, that was intense.
Well, we're about halfway to the moon right now. Hey, let's stop real quick and do a EVA. Let's moonwalk.
Okay, nice.
Want to moonwalk?
Yeah.
Let me open the door. Okay, I'm going to step outside and I'm going to spacewalk.
Nice.
Spacewalk. Halfway to the moon, going to spacewalk. Here,
hang on, let me put on my space helmet so I can talk to you.
There you go.
Astronaut Mark to Astronaut Brian. Astronaut Brian here. Go, Mark. Astronaut Brian, go ahead. You are clear for spacewalk. EVA spacewalk. And I'm stepping out and going to spacewalk right now. Coming back in now. Astronaut Mark to Astronaut Brian. Brian here, go. Clear to come on in. Good. Close the door. Close the door.
All right. Nice. Where's spacewalk, dude.
Gotta close the door.
All right. Now let's continue our trek to the moon.
Trek to the moon. Oh, here we come. There's the moon.
Sure is. Look at that, boy. It looks so moony.
Let me ask a question.
Yes, sir.
How come I'm talking with over the radio and you've got an echo? I'm just wondering. I had to put on my helmet. I see.
Yeah, there
now that we're almost at the moon.
Almost at it.
I need my helmet. Here we go. Going to land on the moon now.
What does that affect?
Boom.
Danny,
I guess we're here on the moon.
We haven't landed yet. Don't you have a landing thing? Here we go. Here's landing.
20 feet. 15 feet.
Down.
We copy you down.
Yep, we're down.
Copy you down.
Houston, Mark and Brian are on the moon now. Roger. All right, well, since we're going to go and we're going to walk on the face of the moon, we need to put on our airlock suit. Excuse me. Let's open the door to the capsule. Going to step outside.
All right.
Thank you. Now we are both climbing down the ladder. We're about to step on the moon. And we're walking around the moon now. I'm walking around the moon. You know, I could sure go for a nice burger right about now. Well, I think there's a barbecue over here. Let's light the queue. Let's do some queue on the moon. Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. Hey, we've got these... What the hell was that? We've got these cool weapons just in case we run into some trouble. Let's hang on before we go to the weapons. Why don't we get a shot of this for Pops Ready? Hey, paparazzi, we're over here. Yeah, make some shots for posterity. All right, there you go.
All
are. We got these weapons. Let's see if these weapons work. I'm going to take mine out. Let's kill something on the moon.
Uh-huh.
Oh, whoa. Nice. Right. Just in case we need it. Hey. Ooh. Hey, shoot this moon rock off the top of my helmet. Hold still. Oh, damn it, you're about to... Are you not listening, man?
I'm listening.
Apparently, we just... all right, took a golf shot. Hey, what is that over there? Is that an alien? I didn't get that. Hello? All right. Hey, look, a Kinko's. We're walking around on the moon. Astronaut Mark to Astronaut Brian, good morning. Can I get you a nice refreshment?
Sure, tang me. Go ahead, tang me. How about you? You want to? Can I tang you? You know what? Beer me.
Roger. All right, have we teleported or warp speed yet?
No.
Who is that?
Apparently Danny was hiding in the luggage compartment.
It is a good one. Whoa, what was that? We warp speeded.
Uh-uh.
We're now at the other side of the moon.
We're on the dark side.
Hey, look, a Kinko's. Wait a minute. We need to get inside this little moon car they gave us and back up.
Uh-huh.
We gotta go in reverse.
All right.
Is that Danny again? Okay, we're backing up. There's that Kinko's again. Wouldn't be a bad time to have some space music. Mm-hmm. You know what, while we're up here, I think I'll just work out a little bit. I gotta do my little workout, so.
Astronaut Mark.
Astronaut Mark to Astronaut Brian, go ahead.
Finish working out.
Mm-hmm. Can I get you a refreshment?
Yeah, tang me.
Tang you.
Tang me.
Mm-hmm. Another beer for you. Please, if you would, beer me. What's that over there?
Is that an elephant up here on the moon?
That's a moon elephant.
Moon elephant.
Moon elephant.
Got his little helmet on.
What the hell is that? Horsey up here in the moon?
Moon horse.
Wow. Let me walk over there by the horse. I'm going to walk over by the horse. Wait. That's not a horse. What is that? I shot it. Whatever it was. Just killed it. We'll kill that too. Let me kill it. Oh, there's a bunch of flies up here. What's going on? Moon flies. Wait, what is that?
Did you leave your freeze-dried food out again?
Apparently I
drunk
did.
Flies. Crazy. Way to go.
Whatever.
What is that?
I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
Oh, it's a roller coaster.
We're on a roller coaster on the moon.
Yeah, nice.
This is
fun.
Oh, what a drop. Well, you wouldn't think that, being that we're weightless, it would have no effect.
Hey, look, a swimming pool.
Hey, nice dive. Yeah, this is refreshing.
Well, there's a lot of stuff we weren't expecting to find on the moon.
Astronaut Brian, Astronaut Mark.
Yeah, Astronaut Brian, go ahead, Mark.
Hear me.
Yep.
Can I get you something?
Yeah, tang me.
What is that? Oh, you're out. Well, it's probably time to climb back in our space capsule and blast off for Earth again.
There's a monkey. I think I'll bring the monkey with me. Moon monkey. Gonna bring the moon monkey.
Space monkey.
Scientists down on Earth want to study the moon monkey.
All right. We're ready for blast off. Leaving the moon. Oh, warp speed. And I guess we're back on Earth now.
Well, we have splashdown.
Huh?
We have splashdown.
Whoosh. There you go.
Danny.
Well, maybe we should have talked about this.
Well, apparently, astronaut Ryan Desnard, Mark.
Astronaut Mark, go ahead.
It seems apparently we've splashed down. Apparently we're here. So why don't we go ahead and open the door to the capsule?
Open the door to the capsule. And take off our helmets.
Oh, helicopter. There they are to pick us up. Hey, guys. It was successful, and we brought back a monkey. So, yeah. We went to the moon. Good to see you guys
again.
Welcome
back.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, we got a lot done.
Safe and sound, thank God.
And oddly enough, Daddy went with us. All right, we'll do business. The game is just around the corner. Stay where you are. It's the Mark and Brian radio program. Yeah.
Oh, my God. How good was that, though?
First time hearing that. That's probably one of my favorite ones from now on. God, that. I felt like Danny during that whole thing. And it's like, apparently, Danny was in the carry-on luggage.
Apparently, you might want to talk about things or whatever, but... Now, and that, guys, that's just another reason why we need to get these guys into the Radio Hall of Fame. I mean, it's moments like that.
Now!
exactly, now. Get them in now. So go out, vote. Do it through the website, which is radiovote.com, or also do it through texting. So, again, we definitely need to get these guys in there for sure. So, our guest today... is becoming a friend of our program, but you know him best for being the man in charge of putting together the Mark and Brian All-Star for the majority of the Christmas shows. He's also produced and recorded and performed with several artists, including Keith Emerson, Ronnie Montrose, Slash, David Coverdale, Peter Frampton, Sammy Hagar, Paul Rogers, Joe Perry, Mickey Dolan, Steve Lukather, and Steve Picaro. And there's just way too many other names to list. Otherwise, we'll be here till like fucking Monday. So today,
how many plans?
Today, he joins us to discuss his third and highly anticipated album, Celluloid Debris, which was 25 years in the making. So please welcome our friend Mark Bonilla. Mark, how are you, bud?
Hey. I'm good. Listen, I deliberately didn't comb my hair so you wouldn't feel out of place.
Well,
you
know? Yeah, I'm kind of.
I just got up and came in here, so I just that way we're all in the same pajamas.
I wear a hat.
Though. I like the fact that you're in your studio. And I'm in my studio and everything. This is kind of cool, man.
This is our man caves, right?
It is. And hopefully you can see Steve behind me over here.
Hey,
so.
Hey, hey, Mark.
Hey. How are you? All right. Oh, my gosh. I had to mention Mickey Dolenz because last time that we talked and everything, we got in this big old monkey conversation.
Yes.
And I'll have to say, you know what? I'm almost agreeing with you on which is the best monkey album. You know, the Capricorn Jones and LTD one.
It's
Headquarters. Yeah. I'm still saying Headquarters, but
Headquarters is great because it was the first one where they actually played their own instruments. You know, they said, look, we're going to do this. So in that way, it's a nice earmark. But I still think the material that's in the Monkees album.
Uh huh.
The best. I just everything's personal. It's a personal thing, you know.
Right.
That was a great album, man.
It is. Before we kind of get into it and everything, how is your son doing? How's the wife and everybody, the family?
Everybody's good. Nate is 6'3", towers over me. Serial killer.
Oh, my God.
Size, you know, he's huge. And but he's in the process. So he just got through doing a t-shirt design and menus for this great place, this restaurant here. And he's doing... illustrations for a graphic novel. He's commissioned to do an album cover after that. He's working on a video game stuff where he's doing that and playing, you know, piano at the same time for it, you know. So he's quite the bohemian.
Nice. So he's basically following your footsteps and even doing just as good.
Well, let's hope he does better.
Yeah.
You know how dads always want their kids to do.
Very true. Very true. Now, the last time you and I saw each other was over at the Ronnie Montrose concert in Orange County right after the NAMM show.
Yeah.
And, dude, that you packed that place out.
Well, I had help, man. You know, I mean, you got guys like Thomas Lang on drums and Mick Mahan and Robert Mason and Mike Wallace. I mean, and Ed Roth, you know. These guys are just, they're just fun to play with. It's all about the hang, really. You know, the hang is good. The music can't suffer at all for it. You know, it's just So these guys are great. I've just started working with Thomas a little bit more regularly on some of his projects, and he's a great cat, and he's unbelievable. I took him out. We did the UK, the Last Eddie Jobson UK tour together.
Oh, nice.
I had him do that. And it was great. It was him and Alex Makachek and me and Eddie. And it was a great, great time, you know. But getting two Austrians in the same room together, you guys, it's dangerous, you know. So,
well, you guys definitely rocked the house that night. I mean, it was just an amazing concert. And, you know, as always, you were just shredding as usual. And and it was fun, man. It was a good concert. Good little show there.
Well, I'm always down for paying tribute to my mentor, Ronnie.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of mentor, and going back to the Monkees real quick, I don't know if you've been listening or not, but we got to interview Michael Nesmith.
Yeah, and he was always my favorite Monkee. As a matter of fact, my grandmother was a seamstress, so I had an array of wool hats custom. I would say, I want a wool hat that has this color and that. So, man, I'm telling you, in 1966, no one could touch me.
Now, did you also put the buttons on there on the top?
No, I didn't put the buttons on there. No, that's true. I didn't do that, but I sure had some wool hat. I mean, that was the way I was. And at the time, there was no puberty going on then. So I had to pull my hair down to try and make the sideburns, you know, with wave set, you know.
And I've seen pictures on your new website, dude, and you did have the hair. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it was just, you know, at like 10 years old, man, it's hard to grow sideburns, you know. His sideburns were so freaking cool, man, you know. They were like Lennon's, you know, on that one little section at the end of the Yellow Submarine where you see Lennon's.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sideburns, like, fuck, man, you know. I got to get me some of those.
Yeah, but you know what? It was a fun interview with him because I was very nervous interviewing him because, you know, an icon like that, you know. And, yeah. You know, I mean, we're talking, you know, inheritor of Liquid Paper, the father of MTV and music videos and everything, you know. He was so down to earth and so wonderful and just a joy.
Have you read his book?
Not yet.
Forever Tuesday. Yeah, it really good. Some really good insights into stuff. I really enjoyed his book.
Yeah, I have the album, though. I have the album and good songs on that. And I mean, I was just blown away by how open he was with us too,
that's
and
great.
Everything. So it was
well.
A
you probably made him feel comfortable, man. You know, that's all it is. It's every, you know, it's how safe they feel.
Yeah, yeah, know? And so, and we did our job with him, and it was fun.
Sure,
it was fun. Well, let's talk about your album now. But first of all, 25 years.
Yeah.
What the hell? What were you doing, like Mark and Brian Christmas shows or something, or what?
At the In-N-Out, I was there, was doing stuff. You know, I was just, I just finished like the second of the American Matador. I was the second guitar instrumental album. At that point, I was getting involved in film. And so I was working a lot with James Newton Howard and just loving that world and thinking, man, I would like to do this. This is great because I've been a movie fanatic my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, I'm going to put a third album on hold for now. I just want to kind of go off and try a few other things. Well, that ended up being 25 years of trying a few other things. You know, I did a lot of film work. I got nominated for an Emmy at one point and worked on the most recent thing was Six Seasons of Justified with Steve Picaro, which was a great experience. And then being able to work with all these other guys and then doing Glenn Hughes's album, doing, you know, then the whole thing with Keith Emerson. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got involved in being able to score for a symphony and all of that stuff. So I figured after this, I had something to say again. You know, I mean, as far as something that was guitar instrumentally sound, I didn't want to just repeat what I had done. So now it's like, okay, I've got justification. I'm going to give this Nick. I'm going to take the 25 years that wherever I've been, all the terrain that I've covered, and represent it on this album. So that's what I've done.
And going back to the whole thing about doing the motion pictures, I mean, you've done some big movies. I mean, we're talking Bourne Legacy, Green Lantern, Iron Man 2, The Scorpion King. You know, I mean, Waterworld even. My personal favorite, Spy Kids. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, Spider-Man 2, Bruce Almighty. These are big films for you.
Yeah.
How did you approach those? Because did they ask you to score them, or were you asked to play guitar?
A lot of those were I came in to do guitars for.
Okay.
But it's in Terminal Velocity, which is a great... This is how you have to sell yourself here in LA. Okay? All right. So I Joel McNeely was the composer on that, right? So he came in and said, hey, I'd love to have you come in and do the guitars. So you have to understand that you're in Todd Ayo's studios. You've got the entire orchestra facing you, right? And they think you're a wanker from the time you come in, you know, because who's this guitar player? And I've got my rig on the other side, so we're facing each other, right? Now, I have to prove myself because the amount of money that's being spent every minute, you know, with the orchestra, it's exorbitant. Yeah. So you can't clam this stuff, you know, when it's live. So, you know, so I had to okay, I got to be cool about this. And we did it. It was great. Everything was great. And then at the end, they were about ready to break for lunch. And Joel came up to me and goes, man, I screwed up. There was a cue I forgot to do. And the director is going to want to come in and see it. And it's in a pivotal cue where Charlie Sheen is skydiving into the city. Mm-hmm. He says, I wanted to do a rock thing because I had you in mind to do it, but I don't have anything. We're going to take a union break here. We're going to go on, lunch break. Can you get the guys together and write something during the lunch hour?
And just improv the whole thing.
So what I did was I never saw the film. I didn't see it. I says it was a minute and a half or whatever it was, the length of the cube. So it was, I think it was John, it was J.R., John Robinson and Neil Steubenhaus, two crack, guys, bass and drums. They played on everything. Mm-hmm. So we got together and I charted out something. I said, okay, let's roll tape, go, and, we kind of got it all together. And just about the time that lunch hour was over, so I sat down with the director and watched it. And I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen how it looks to picture, but I'm sitting here explaining how I made it work, with it, and I'm making it up as I go. I could, we come out here and say, see, I use this dive bombing thing here. Well, that communicates the velocity of which he spills into the atmosphere. And they're going, yeah. And I would watch it and hear what happened, hear the music that was happening. Then I would try and bullshit some kind of thing this is at this time we employ this and it basically sold the whole thing to him, and he went, that's amazing, that's incredible. I said, well, you have to take your time with these things sometimes.
Oh my god, Mark. Wow.
It was just oh my god, he bought it, but it's good. It worked. I had watching it, I had to make it up, so it was but that's sometimes that's
what you gotta do. Yeah Well, hopefully he doesn't listen to our show then after all these years goes, that son of a bitch. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, 25 years, dude. I mean, it definitely a long time, and I can imagine how quickly time will fly by when you're doing so many projects. I mean, because you're so sought after, basically. Celluloid Debris.
Yeah.
Why that title?
Well, because for one, I had a couple of things that happened on this album is where I dreamed stuff, a couple of titles on the album were dreams that I had. I went, mm-hmm. What the hell does that mean? But Celluloid Debris is it kind of came about because it's the thing, it's a very personal album. It's not only is it the last 25 years of my life, but it's also, it harkens back. There's segs in between the songs that harken back to my childhood stuff. And what I mean by that is I have a friend, I still do. He's actually on the album. His name is Jim Gammon. Mm-hmm. And he was my first friend growing up. And he was blind since birth. And I would see him on his tricycle across the street. And we kind of were on an incline. And I'd see him pedal like hell down the street and lift his feet up so the pedals would do this. And then he would turn into his driveway every time, skid and turn into his driveway. So I thought, well, okay, that's cool, And then I found out he was blind. And I went, how do you do that? You don't even have any eyes. And he goes, I count the clicks in the sidewalk. I'm like, what?
Holy clicks, crap.
When they put sidewalk slabs in, right, there's a little seam.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And the tricycle wheel was like a tubeless tire. It was hard, so it went g-dick, as it went across. Wow. He went up and timed all of them or counted them. So he said, every once in a while, I miscount and I end up in the hedge. But so this guy was because his whole world was about sound. He had tape recorders, he had ham radios, he had all this stuff, and we would record everything. It didn't matter what it was. We'd take he'd find a pitcher tube, you know, from a TV, we go down to the carport and chuck it off the roof just to record it.
You to know, hear how it sounds.
Flash, you know, this is what our lives were, you know. And we recorded everything. He went to a guitar lesson I had when I was 10. I have the whole thing on tape, you know, which
really?
Is part of it is on the, part of it is on the album. There's a little seg of it where I can't get this particular thing. And they said, well, why don't you try something else? Like, no, I'm not going to try anything else. You know, I'm completely got an attitude.
Okay.
That.
Yeah. I know which one it is. Okay.
So, a lot of the things that are in these segs were composites from stuff from our childhood. That we put into this that actually set the next song up, but is just some amazing stuff that we've got documented. and he was also an amazing trumpet player, man. He was like a Miles fanatic.
Now, it was his house, if I wasn't mistaken, too, in our last conversation, that you guys would get together and do these jam sessions too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. We like neighborhood jam sessions, yeah. So, you know, he was so responsible. He had the first Mahavishnu Orchestra record. He had the first Blood, Sweat, and Tears, the first Chicago, the first ELP. So so much of my early formative years was directly responsible for him because he always had the latest album and had this great gear to play it on. So I had him on. He plays trumpet on one of the tunes called Sailor on there. I had him come in.
Great song, by the way, too.
Yeah. That's Godly and Cream, you know. Uh-huh. That's a cover from from them, but so I think getting back to the title, the celluloid, it's a film. You know, a film is made of celluloid,
right.
So that's
right.
You know, and so it's basically a film of fragments of my life, and so that hence the debris. So it's celluloid debris.
I like it.
Yeah, you know, just it came to me one night when I was dreaming, and I went, "What's celluloid debris?" You know, well, sounds just, cool.
Yeah, write that down. Oh, yeah.
Well, that I did. I write that shit down because I know that, you know, maybe it'll come in handy, and it ended up being the title, you know, but it made sense, you know.
I had a chance to listen to the album. I've been listening to it all week because I was able to download it, and I want to go back and actually buy the CD version, though.
Oh, thank you.
And I've been a fan of certain instrumental guitar players, Neil Zaza. God, I'm trying to think of his name right now. Joe Satriani, of course. Steve Vai.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not lying. This is one of the best ones I've heard in a long time, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This thing, it's, and I could tell that it seemed like your approach on this was that of almost like a film score.
Yeah. Well, it is.
Because this whole thing is just from top to bottom. It took me to another place, basically.
Thank you. Well, that's been the operative term so far. Has been people have been taken on a journey, and I like the fact that that's the case. It's what any artist would like their audience to do.
Yeah.
But it was I'm not a big fan of soloing so much. In other words, soloing for the sake of soloing. I think that people have to understand, or any artist has to understand that no artist is greater than the song that they're representing. In other words, we're all servants to the music.
Mm-hmm.
And once that you do something that diverges from that path, in other words, it fulfills your ego, then you're off course. And so much of this has to do with composition, thematic development, arrangement, all of those things that I think in my past, the things that I looked up to were all composition heavy. In other words, they weren't just a chord progression to wank over. And
right,
I've heard
a lot of
instrumental records that are like that. It's like, man, this is tiresome. It's the same thing over and over again. I know you're quick, I know you're fast, but what are you saying? And what all art is, it's all storytelling. You know, it doesn't matter if you're using words or you're using notes. You still have to tell a story. You have to construct it. You have to have your main protagonist. You have to have a plot arc. All of those things still hold true. You're just doing it in a musical sense. And so that's why there's so much composition on the album. And when I solo, there's a reason for it. And it doesn't go on and on and on. It's there for a specific purpose and there to achieve something. And what that is hopefully is the success of the composition, success of the mood of the song. And that's why it's a little different. Plus, I've used the orchestration. All the chops that I learned in orchestrating for symphony, I've incorporated into the guitar. There's tons of tracks. I actually maxed out Ryan Green's Pro Tools at 165 tracks at one point on the Long Awakening.
Oh, God.
It would strike fear into the heart of any mixing engineer other than Ryan Green, because he's a master at what he does. And he was able to take all of those parts, because they don't all happen at the same time. They're happening in little areas, like, you know, you got a string section, or you have like the piccolo player doesn't play the entire symphony.
Right.
He plays 16 measures out of it, right? So that track has guitars here. It's the hybrids, combinations of stuff. So it's like a guitar orchestra in a rock situation. That's how I approached it this time.
Well, it's definitely an amazing job, because from the first track, which is Alpha Male, all the way down to, I guess, the last show, which is our Winter Love, which you dedicated to your brother.
Yes, I did.
You know, it definitely took you on this journey. And there's everything in between. I mean, there's good rocking stuff on there. There's stuff to make love to in this thing, too. And I mean, it was just really interesting. One thing I noticed, though, you did a part one and part two for The Eruption of John.
Yeah.
And you had vocals on part one.
Yeah.
But not on part two. What was the reasoning for that?
Well, that original song, by the way, was done about the time that I was working with Keith Emerson in the Keith Emerson Band.
Okay.
And I had a dream about that. Was the other one that I had a dream about. I had dreamed the title, The Eruption of John Minimum, and I had no idea what it meant. And I wrote it down, of course, because it sounded interesting. And it occurred to me to write something about the guy that lives next door or down the street, the quiet guy that at some point snaps and walks into a mall or walks into a synagogue and lights the place up. And everybody's going, you know, afterwards, we never saw it coming. What happened? You know, where did this guy diverge? You know? And so the lyrics, I felt like I needed to explain it lyrically. So the first part was basically his prepping for this thing, and if you listen to the seg that follow that precedes it, it's you can hear somebody loading bullets and they're pulling up the windows, and there's a preacher on the radio talking about basically his persona and why he's cracking at this point. And that actually was taken from one of my childhood the church that I used to go to. They had a thing called Strength for Today, and the pastors would get on there, and you'd dial in, and they would give you like a quote during the day, or if somebody needed some spiritual guidance, they would do that. Mm-hmm. And Jim, of course, Gammon, taped all of that stuff. And there's another one on there, too. But I thought that's perfect, because it you know, with the car not being able to start, you know, trying to kick over and finally just peeling out after it just collapses under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tune, you know, the lyrics are basically what's going on, what led him to this point. And then part two, I felt didn't need any lyrics, but was basically all the personality conflicts and things that he went through during the actual act of the shooting. So there's all kinds of skits, you know, it's probably the most sinister, you know, sounding track on the album, but has these moments of levity. So it kind of traces the whole act of him walking into the premises and the whole thing all the way up to him at the end, ending it for himself, you know. So it's a dark track, but it goes through all the mental things that might happen with somebody that's going through something that's traumatic, you know, as far as that point. So
I remember, and I don't know if you had a chance to work with him or play with him or anything, but Janie Lane from Warrant wrote a song called Andy Warhol Was Right. And it was kind of like about that 15 minutes of somebody snapping or whatever. So, I mean, I could definitely you know, see that point of view on that whole song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an impressionistic interpretation of what might be going through somebody's head, because you think about all the different things. Their life is just about to end, and they know it.
Right.
It's not like, you know, it's not like they're going to end it for themselves. But all the things that go on, all the reviews, even if there's a couple of good memories, it's in there. So it's a flood of all of that stuff that comes back in his, you know, in their brain. So that's where that's at.
Yeah. The first single that you've kind of put out there was Alpha Male.
Yeah.
And what made you decide to put that as the first song and the first single?
Well, it was one of those things that back in the Doubly Ticket and Matador days, more for Doubly Ticket, it was more of a pyrotechnical album. Like, check out what I can do. You know, I wanted to make a splash. I wanted to make an impression, even though I was still heavily into the compositional thing. It kind of displayed more of my chops at that point. than Matador. Matador started to get a little bit more compositional, a little bit was trying to flex those muscles. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with Alpha Male, I figured it's been 25 years. And people wondering where I am, you know, at least the guitar instrumental community, you know, because right. I've been right. all this other stuff. So, okay, I had to make a splash, I think, initially. So I said, okay, I'm gonna write something that requires a little bit of technical dexterity, so people know that I'm back, or I still hopefully got it, you know, like mm-hmm. I used to. Hopefully a bit better. So that tune is, I think, the most physically demanding song, you know, as far as all the changes that go in. Plus, I did all the keyboard stuff as well.
Oh wow!
So
oh, wow.
That's basically just me and Joe Travers on that track. Joe being the drummer, who's a phenomenal drummer, and so I just thought it was a good opener. And the whole beginning part, actually, I wrote that right after Chris Cornell died. I was a major fan of Cornell and Soundgarden, and I was really just bummed that it was just like, my God, you know, what a loss. So that whole opening section I wrote in tribute to Chris Cornell, it's kind of a slow, you know, fanfare-ish, Soundgarden-y kind of thing, but that was just my tip of the hat going, thank you, you know, for...
Right.
For being here, at least in the short amount of time that you were, you know, and then we got into it proper after that. But and I just thought it was a good launch track, you know.
Cool. This album, like I said, I mean, it's definitely it's bigger than any other guitar instrumental track album that I've heard before. And to me, it's more of just a true instrumental. It just so happens there's guitar in there once in a while. Like you said,
that's what Ryan said. Ryan said the same thing, because I said guitar instrumental album. And he goes, no, Mark, this is an instrumental album.
Yeah.
So that's great. You basically said the same thing.
Yeah, and it's just one, because it's such a big thing. I mean, it's almost, like I said, it's so orchestral in the way you've done everything. Yeah. What was the approach, though, for it when you're sitting in the studio? You know, how did you figure out what part was going to be, let's say, like section one or section two, or I mean, no, how'd you do all that?
Well, you have to kind of understand where this stuff comes from. I've tried to explain to my students and people in clinics and things that you have to understand that this doesn't come from you. And the problem is once people think that the music comes from them, they're in trouble. Because it's like going into the desert with a canteen. It's going to run out of water at some point. Mm-hmm. But if you look at creativity as a river that runs alongside the desert, and anytime you get thirsty or you need some water, you go over there and you dip your cup in. And so by virtue of that, I learned that that's how at least I operate, is I have a set of muses that come down when I ask them to, basically. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds a little bit weird, but it actually is the case.
No, I can relate.
The music flows through you, not from you. And if you keep yourself open and trust that, you're like a conduit. And so a lot of times, I'll write something or I'll play something, and then I go back later and listen to it and go, man, I don't remember ever writing that. I don't even remember coming up with that shit. I couldn't do it again.
Is that me?
Yeah, exactly. So anytime anybody goes, that was a brilliant composition, I said, great, I'll tell them when I see them, because I'm not responsible for it, really not. They're like firemen. You know, they're up in the loft, and they're reading their paper, and they're watching soap operas or eating a sandwich, and when you play the keyboard or you strum the guitar, it's like, oh, there's the alarm. It'll come down the pole, right, you know, right. And then your job basically is to keep your car tuned up so that whoever wants to drive it, it'll respond. So when I approached the album, it was like I just started writing. I had two or three ideas that I had started back, like after Matador, that I pulled, you know, from my old ADAT tapes that I thought were still good, and then kind of went from there. So it's it was kind of just a discovery process where I didn't really have a set plan for it, other than I went, okay, I want a tune that does this, or I want a tune that does that. Let's see what comes out. You know, wow. So, and then it was up to me then to sequence it and coordinate it after I got all of the major. It's like blocking a scene. You know, you've got all the actors move here, here, here. Then you can start honing it and start injecting better dialogue and all of those things to make it all cohesive so that it all flows. And that's what the album does. It flows. It's meant to be listened to as an album, not as individual tracks.
Right.
Because of the SIGs. And it goes, they're sequenced for a reason to give you a well-balanced emotional meal. As it goes through, you know, so that's,
well, it's got your vitamin A, B, C, D. It's all in there for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's kind of how I approached it. You know, you have to kind of let the sail loose and see where the wind blows you, because it will always pull you somewhere where hopefully you haven't gone before, and that it'll challenge you. And that's, you know, you should be like David Bowie once said, that you want to be out in the water far enough where your feet just barely touch the sand. You know, because it's a good place to be where you've got a little bit of control, but that tide can pull you in different directions. And I think that was an astute analogy.
That's a very good analogy. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. In doing instrumental versus, let's say, working with somebody that where you have, you know, a verse and a chorus, you know, with lyrics and everything, is the approach for you the same, or is it a little bit different?
No, it's actually the same. It's all the same. I was doing a project a few years ago with Troy Licata from Tesla.
Oh.
And I worked with a songwriter and singer named Micah Greiner. Great, great singer. And he and I put a whole album together. It was a band called Seville Row. And we just sat in here, and I just started playing, and he started singing. We just rolled tape. And he was singing nonsensical lyrics or whatever. It didn't matter. It was a phonetical mishmash. But we got melodies out of it. We got all of this stuff out of it. It was like, wow, this is it flows from you. It really does. It's not something that you have to work hard at. It shouldn't have to. And the stuff will come out. And as long as you're open and relaxed, and you have to be in a relaxed state in order for it to happen, and it will come through you. And, you know, so we had luckily had it all down on tape. And then I would go back and sort and go, oh, that's a good part. Let's put that here. You know, you'd kind of disassemble it and reassemble it in things that would make a cohesive piece of music. So whether it was lyrics or whether it's music, it's all storytelling. Like I say, it's one of those things that you're making some kind of a communication where it progresses. And the principles are all the same. They're the same in painting. They're the same in dance. They're the same in acting. Any of those. It's a through line through all of the arts. It doesn't matter. It just depends on what your medium is.
Right. Speaking of a different medium, your website, markbonilla.com.
Yeah.
That is a freaking killer website, dude.
It worked hard. I got to give street cred to Sean Oster, because he was able to put into reality some of my ideas. Like I had on the front, I said, I have this picture. Can you make fog like drift between me and the drum kit? And he goes, oh boy. And he goes, I can always depend on you to push me in some area where I have no idea how to get it done, but I will get it done for you.
Well,
and
he did. Well, I got to tell you this. So last week when I was ready to download the album, right before I did, because it was a little bit later at night, I had a little edible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, laugh it up, Steve. So,
incredible edible.
It was good. It was good. And so, and I figured, okay, well, before I go to bed, I better go to the website, download Mark's album and everything. And I get to that main page.
Yeah.
I thought my screen was on fire. Because I've never seen anybody do something like that on a website where I'm like, I'm at a Mark Bonilla concert and there's smoke coming through. This is fucking awesome. You know?
Yeah.
And it took me a while to realize it's an effect. My screen's okay.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it. Yeah, I just, you know, it was just, I wanted something. I didn't want a stagnant splash screen. I wanted something where it was moving, you know? And so I had the idea, and I called him one morning. I said, can you do this? And he goes, oh, geez, that sounds cool. He said, shit. Now I got to make it work, you know, and he did. He made it work. You know, we worked it.
We're looking at it right now, and it looks freaking awesome, dude. You know, it's got you there looking cool, you big lefty guitar player, you. And, you know, new album released, listen now. And it's just, it's an awesome website. And I love the fact that also it says Mark Bonilla official website. It matches The celluloid.
Celluloid debris, yes.
Yeah, the way
you, see, all the design says is not lost on you. I like that.
I pay attention to detail, dude.
I do. Well, so do I. So I appreciate people that do because, yeah, there was a lot of design that went into that. I spent a lot of hours, you know, getting it constructed so that it had, again, it's like a composition. It has to have theme. It's got to have, you know, continuity. It has to have all that and variety and all of those things. It's a representative, you know, element of what I do. So it would have to be that way, I would think, you know.
Yeah, and it's just really cool. And then I love the fact that you put out the different guitars that you use on here. You know, everything from your Fenders. And what surprised me, though, was not how many Fenders you have, but when I got to the acoustic section, though, was that you chose Yamaha guitars.
Yeah.
What made you decide to go with
I've had a long-term endorsement with Yamaha ever since Double E Ticket.
Uh-huh.
And Ken DePron at Yamaha has been such a saint, and the guitars sound great. You know, I record with them direct. Yeah, like the nylon string just sounds amazing on there. You'll hear it on the album.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they've really done it right. And I mean, I have you'll see, I've got a couple of Martins in there, you know, a triple O and a double O 28, and I use those too. But the Yamahas are so easy to play, and you know, I've been with them since Toy Matinee days. So it's they're just, you know, you have to get it's like tools that really work for you. It's like a certain car that has the right accelerator and the right brake and the right shifting. You know, you'll find something that really works for your playing style. You know, whatever that is. And I found the Yamaha has always been that case. That's why I play the Pacifica, my Marvel guitar. Those are Pacificas. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I'll be buried with that guitar. It's they're just great, great instruments, you know, so.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, because when I worked at Guitar Center, I mean, especially for an entry level guitar, they're phenomenal instruments for the money.
Yeah.
And to even get into their mid grade, electric acoustics. I mean, even I was blown away by some of them. Yeah. So I can totally understand where you come from.
Yeah, they totally work, and the action, everything is about them. I mean, I'm so used to them now, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I say, what you'll find funny is on this album, a majority of the sounds on it are not from an amp; they're from a little Line 6 pod that I have.
I love those things.
Those little kidney-shaped Line 6 pods. I've got one of the originals, and I've been able to doctor those sounds up and get that going, and they sound amazing. I mean, you know, I have a red plate, black line, which is a phenomenal amp that I use. I use that live. You know, I've got a Bogner, I've got Marshalls, I've got divided by 13s, Fenders, you know, all of that stuff. But so much of that album is out through that frickin' pod. It just, you know, certain tools you can make work for you with your style or your touch or all of that stuff. And so
that's what I have in my studio. I have right over here, I've got the rack version of the XT. I then have the Kidney Bean XT.
Yeah.
And then I use the floorboard version of the XT.
Okay.
So I've got, you know, all three versions of those. And I mean, I loved it from the fact that I can get any amp that I want. And if you dial it in right, nobody's really going to know.
Well, it doesn't matter if they know or not. I'm proud to say that I got the sounds out of that Line 6 because it's like, look, you can't argue with the tones on the record. You know, if they work, I could say, well, I used a boutique amp with, you know, AAA, circuitry and all that. I don't give a shit about that. I give a shit about how it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to put a pig nose up and mic it, you know, I'll do that.
And I've seen people do that too.
Of course, there's no loss of dignity with anything if it works for you. And that pod is amazing. I love that thing, you know. And
what's funny, too, is that I actually had to go out and get the 2.0 version because there were certain sounds in that.
Yeah.
That I couldn't use with the XT, know. And so I have both of those. And I was looking around right now trying to find out where it is, and it's all plugged in. But. But no, I love those things. And to know that can you send your patches over to me?
Yes. Yeah, I can send them over. But it's so much of this is in your hands, you know, so much of it's the
true.
Tone is in your hands. You know, you could have six guys play the same amp the same guitar, and you're going to get six different tones.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, too, and this is one thing I was had really wanted to concentrate on, is the variety of tones on the album, because there's a shitload of them on there, all different types, from direct, all that stuff. Because don't you remember growing up, see if you agree with me on this.
Okay.
It used to be, back in the 60s and 70s, as soon as you heard a guitar solo, you knew who it was. It was like you knew Mark Farner from Jeff Beck, you know, from Eric Clapton, from Hendrix, you know, Jan Ackerman. You knew everyone's tone and style. It didn't. It's kind of, you know what I equate it to? It's kind of like cars. When you had the cars back in the 60s and 70s, they all looked like themselves, where they all had a particular face. You know, like you knew an Edsel from a Volkswagen, you know, from a Cadillac, you know, from an Eldorado, from a Riviera to a Corvette. You knew right away. Nowadays, you have to look at the logo to go, is that a Nissan? What is that thing? Because they all look like electric shavers. There's nothing there. There's no design sense anymore.
Yeah, it's like, is that a Hyundai or is that a Honda? I can't tell.
You can't tell unless you look at the logo, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with guitar tones, because of the advent of presets and software that anybody can get now, that I think everybody has tended to start sounding the same as far as their guitar tones and stuff. I don't think there's as much individuality anymore like there used to be in the 60s and 70s, when you heard one, two, three notes and you knew exactly who it was. So I think with this is what I tried to do, is to go back to that vintage age where you really heard tones and you really heard differences in that, and hopefully that's marked a signature for me. But it's basically out of tribute to all of those great guitar tones that you used to hear, and you knew at the drop of a hat who was playing.
Who it was, yeah. That's what I could definitely agree, because back then you could definitely tell. Like, I was really good, because my first instrument was drums.
Yeah.
So I could tell the difference between, let's say, you know, I'm going to go extreme here, but between, let's say, John Bonham and Tico Torres.
Sure.
You know, I could totally tell immediately who was who, you know.
Absolutely.
Because of the way. So, yeah, I can totally understand. With the same thing with the guitar tones. You can tell who was who based upon that. And, you know, in my approach with the Line 6 stuff has been a couple of different ways, is like, if I'm looking for a Clapton tone, you know, I'm going to thinking, oh, this might sound good for this song. So if I'm looking for a Clapton tone, there's geeks out there already that have gone through it and come as close as they can to either the Cream session or the Layla session or whatever. And I'll just download those and just listen with my ears and go, what do I feel is going to fit best with this song?
Right.
You know, all I know is I want a Clapton tone, and I'll go through, you know, 15, 20 of them and go, ah, this is the one I like. And I'll play that same riff over and over again and go, that's the one I'm looking for. And then use that in.
Yeah. Well, again, you're catering it to your own personal playing style. And that's the thing, because your fingers make a big, big, you know, that's where a lot of your tone comes anyway. So you can take one of those things as a block, but you need to change it and to alter it to accommodate and to be able for it to do your will. Mm-hmm. And that's what's important, I think. You know, just like you would an amp, you know, tweaking an amp.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
You know, different people have different tones for that. You know, what works for one person doesn't work for another one, you know. But I think that's really an important thing, is to really find your tone, you know, and, you know, make that work for you, so that you've carved out a little bit of niche in the world, where when they hear you, they go, oh, I know who that is, you know.
Right.
So. Right.
Now, also on your website, and I was kind of happy to see this, though, and I'm actually going to get it. But, of course, recently put out a book on guitar playing itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to ask a question, and don't take insult to this, though.
I'm not at all.
There's so many books out there on guitar playing.
Yep.
Some are good, some are crappy. Yeah. What makes this book unique, Mark, coming from
Well, Miami? What makes it unique, I think, is the reason I did this was I put together, I've been thinking about doing a book for a lot of years. And I would, you know, because I taught a lot at the beginning, and I'm now back teaching now as well, in between stuff that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I've always written things down, like when it occurred to me at the time, like a thought about music, whatever. And I've kept a diary, not a diary, but a kind of like a journal of observations about music that I've learned through all these experiences. And I said, okay, now it's time to put together a book that is just the essential things that you need for guitar playing. In other words, it's kind of like having a closet, you know, and you've got all this knowledge in there, right? And have things like, scales. Okay, I've got all my modes. I've got all of, my chords, different versions of the stuff. But I don't use a lot of it.
Right.
Because a lot of it's not practical, right? So it's like going in and thinking, oh, I forgot I had this shirt. Oh, I don't remember these pants. Shit, I don't wear them anymore. So what I've done is gone into the closet and cleaned out all the old shit that you don't need, all the shoes that you don't wear anymore that don't apply to you, and basically given you the essential information from music theory on out that you can use. And there's a thing called tonal centering that will, you don't have to learn about modes. It's a waste of time. You could basically take one major scale and be able to use it over any chord in music, jazz, anything like that, and it'll work fine. And it's what horn players do. It's what piano players do. They just don't tell you. So with guitar players, they're a screwed up lot like that. And you don't have any flow then. You don't have any of those other things. So I go through those. I go through the essential chords that you need, all of that stuff. It's all scaled down and it's all filet. And at the last part of the book, and this is the thing that I think really diverges from the other books, and that is that I've kind of put down observations about where, like I was saying before, where this stuff comes from and the performance stuff and all of the things that you only find out about through street knowledge. You only find out about through playing. There's a section in the book that's talking about being in a band, mm-hmm. with the importance and how to work within a band confine, and all of these things that I don't know any videos or any music books that actually address the practical stuff like that and the spiritual element of where the stuff comes from, how to lock into it, how to flow, how to recognize it, how to basically surrender yourself to that flow. So there's a lot of that in there as well. A lot of just observation stuff. Try and cut the learning time in half, that would take you 50 years to learn this stuff. It's mm-hmm. basically in one book. And that's why, it's called Balance of Power, because it's practical knowledge with the, I don't know what you want to call it, but the inspirational stuff that comes on either side. So you're not just playing a song, you're performing it. And that's what the big thing is. So,
I like that. That's awesome. Like that. And what's really neat is that what you've done, too, is you have a listening.
Suggested listening
of different songs. Yeah. And, I mean, obviously there's a reason for each one.
Yes.
But it's everybody from Jeff Beck to Mike Bloomfield. You've got Eric Clapton on here, obviously. Rick Derringer, John Fogerty, David Gilmour. Hendrix, of course, Alan Holdsworth, Steve Howe. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, there's 50 of them. Yeah, and they're in the book explained, and then on the website you can link in and listen to them. For that mm-hmm. reason, so they don't have to go out and look for them and go right to the website.
That's awesome,
go to the links page, and they can listen. Yeah.
So each of these then is part of the lesson within itself.
Yeah, yeah. It's well, there's all of the things that, like in the book, it's suggested listening. It's all 50 tracks, mm-hmm. and it's what to listen for. What the example is that we've discussed in the book. Here's a good example of those particular executions of whatever it happens to be, whether it happens to be double stops, if it happens to be, building a solo in a housewife or in a kind of like mm-hmm. a foundation house in the attic. Whatever the principles are that I'm explaining in the book are exemplified by these, and they're listed, and then you can go and, like I say, on the website, they're kind of meant to be a companion piece.
Just a great list, and I've kind of done the same thing when I've taught also.
Yeah,
because like I'll pick, let's say, Rick Nelson's Garden Party because of the strumming pattern that you have to do,
right,
and go, okay, it's that type of pattern, and then I'll change it up and go, okay, let's do a CCR song, and again it's a similar pattern but it's without the swing feel, it's more of a straight feel, kind of a thing, and then we'll go into something completely different. So I could totally get it and totally understand that. So that's freaking awesome, dude. And again, it's just a great website. You've got everything here. There's so many things to look at. The most important thing is buying the album.
Well, that is at this point. Yeah, I want people to really hear.
I've seen your car, and you need a new car.
That's true. I do. But
And, you know, people need to go out and get this album because it is just a freaking phenomenal album. It's one of the best ones I've heard in a really, really, really long time.
I'm very, very happy with it.
And, you know, and I'm not an instrumental kind of guitar guy, you know.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed this. I really, really did. So before we go, Mark, I want to ask just a few questions here. Sure. Out of your career and everything, was there a person that you kind of got starstruck with the most?
Dick Van Dyke. I a major Dick Van Dyke fan, right? Mm-hmm. I don't usually get starstruck. I've been around a lot of, you know, great people, and I'm just glad to be there.
Right.
You know? And you find out that these people really aren't stars to themselves. They're just regular people that just love what they're doing, and they feel fortunate they were able to do this their whole life.
Yeah,
we all think that we're just basically a step ahead of the public finding out what imposters we are. You know, this is just kind of how.
That's true, man.
It's true. It is true. You know, because we're doing what we like to do. Shit, can you do this? Is it legal?
I had a buddy of mine that I worked with at Knott's Berry Farm. Actually, I think you knew him, Steve Terry.
Yeah.
He played the banjo. And he was a performer at the Calico Saloon.
Yeah.
And he played banjo amazingly, you know. And when I was working there, and I was like 19, 20 at the time. And I walked up and said, Terry, can you teach me how to play banjo? And he goes, you don't want to learn from me. I said, dude, I've been watching you on stage. You're phenomenal. Yeah. You know, I'd love to learn from you. You know, any lesson or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes, all right, bring me the banjo. I said, okay. So I brought him his case. He opened it up, takes out the banjo, starts playing, finger picking. And I'm just getting a woody because of it. That's just so fucking cool.
Yeah.
He goes, okay, now look at my chording hand, my left hand. He goes, how many chords am I playing? So I figured out the positions, and I go, three. He goes, okay. Puts the banjo back in the case, shuts it or whatever. He goes, I've been playing banjo for 30 years. Those are the only three chords I know. He goes, it's not what you know, it's how you present what you know.
Thank you. Big lesson.
And I'm like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true.
And
the thing with Dick Van Dyke was it was a Mark and Brian Christmas show, and he was coming out to do the Christmas Story. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so jacked. Maybe hopefully I can meet him, you know,
right.
I know every Dick Van Dyke episode known to me. I mean, I know them all. I can quote them like Star Trek.
Oh, shit.
And so I'm in there, and everybody else was on stage. I was in the dressing room by myself, restringing guitar, and he just walks in, and I'm like, Dick, you know, and I just go up to him, and I go, dude, I'm your biggest fan, and he goes, well, thank you, and I goes, no, you don't get it, I'm your biggest fan, I'm the guy, I'm your biggest fan, and he says, I always wanted to meet you. Hug, you know, it was like, this is cool, this is fucking Robert Petrie, you know, and he says, let's talk after the show, you know, and I didn't see him after that because I was on stage the rest of the night. I
never got another,
but that's my that was my memory of him, was that great
moment
that he said, I always wanted to meet you, you know, just such a great cat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
had such a wonderful career from ever since you moved down, you know, from the Frisco area.
Yeah.
But do you have any regrets or things you would do differently in your career?
No. And it's not, you know, I mean, there were things like, I could think financially, you know, I should have stayed with the Tuesday Night Music Club a little bit longer so I could get songwriting credit on Sheryl Crow's album. But I bailed too soon for that. You know, we were doing it. And then I said, yeah, I'm going to cool from this, but I don't really, and I don't think, you know, having regrets, I mean, you're basically thinking about a scenario that you don't know what's going to happen. It's like an alternate universe. You don't really know. I could have made that decision. Hell, I would have gone here. I mean, I regret that the Toy Matinee didn't get picked up to do the, you know, Jethro Tull. I found out Jethro Tull wanted to bring us on tour, on their world tour.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Don Perry told me that. He says, yeah, you didn't realize that. Yeah, we were lobbying hard for you, but there were some political things going on, some personal things that I didn't know about. I said, God, that would have been a great thing. So I regret that. But again, it's one of those things where you don't really know what would have happened, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I just think that it's one of those things where, you know, I think what's happening or what's happened in my life has been for a reason, for purpose, for, you know, learning and all of that. So I don't really regret anything. You know, it's just not, you know, except for Derek Carr getting his foot broken two seasons ago. I do regret that. because we almost had it, man. We were almost there, you know, Raiders. But other than that, no.
Well, I know there's also one big thing that is definitely not a regret for you, and that's that $28,000 Firebird that you bought.
Yeah.
That almost went to Paul McCartney. I remember that story, so.
Yes, that's true. God bless my wife.
Exactly. Exactly.
Man.
Overall, in general, what makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh? Truth. You know, it's the best thing. It's the best thing. I love when people dispense it, you know, brutally. You know, because it makes people really uncomfortable. And I love people in uncomfortable situations. It's wonderful, you know. And I don't know, just you know, irony, any of those things, you know, just things out of the ordinary. I was at Vons the other day. And you know how the bag, the checkers, you know, they're not all there. There's a couple of bricks missing, you know. And this guy was really huge. And the girl, the checker, was really small and frail and just like this little book mouse, right?
Oh, my God.
And he's bagging stuff. He's like, how are you today? I'm fine, you know. And she's just like, God, get me through this, you know. And then he leans over to her and he goes, I'm Jennifer's sister.
Yeah. And wow.
And then he tells me and I went, no kidding. I thought you looked familiar, you know. And she's just like, what's going on? You know, I didn't sign up for this. I love people in uncomfortable situations like that. You know, it was great. Another one happened in the elevator about a month ago where I had a Taekwondo. It's the same. I do Taekwondo, right? So okay. I'm in the elevator and this Korean gentleman comes in. And this was with two other people. The executives were going up in Merrill Lynch's office, right?
Uh-huh.
And he comes in, he goes, oh, Taekwondo. And he goes, whoa, like this. And I went, yeah, like this, and scream like we were going to face off. And these other two people are like against the wall. Like what have we got? So is this going to be on Live Leak in about an hour? You know,
how do we get into this Jackie Chan movie and how do we get out?
Yeah, exactly. So it was just, I love people being uncomfortable situations. I think it's just funny. So that's what makes me laugh.
Oh, that's good. Those are good. I know Steve's back here chuckling away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's funny, man. You know?
What is the most embarrassing moment you had on stage?
Embarrassing moment I've had on stage? There's so many. But I'll tell you, but this was the one that stands out to be a much, much funnier situation than embarrassing. Is I used to be in a lounge act, right? Back in the day, it was Lou DiMaggio and the Accents. And it's exactly what you'd think,
oh
right?
Oh, my God.
The guy's got a toupee, cap teeth. He looks like Jim Jones from the People Temple, you know. And he had a black vest, you know, that we had to wear the same thing, you know, this little monkey suit. And he had an accordion that he cut in half, and he played on this little little frame that said the Accents, a homemade frame. He had all of his music, you know, spread it out. And we would play these Lions clubs and all these things. And we were at this place called the Boundary Oaks in Walnut Creek. And of course, when people come up to ask you to play something, it's never in the middle. It's never in between the songs. They come up and like pull on your, because they're drunk. They pull on your shoulder and says, can you play, you know, this song? Can you play? It's like you're leaning over. Yes, what? We may play, you know. And so it happened to be we were playing On the Road Again. You know, On the Road Again, right? So we're playing this song. And this lady comes up to Lou. And she's got her hands on his, you know, the stand there, and she's leaning over and going, can you play It's Snowing? Like, and he's like, what? It's Snowing. It's that Glen Campbell song, you know. And she's like, there's no Glen Campbell. He goes, you know, it's snowing and your door is always open and your path is free to walk. You know? So, oh, my Gentle God. On My. And he got to Gentle On My, and she passes out. she takes the stand with him. He played it all the way down, man.
Oh my God.
It lands on her, right?
Uh-huh.
And she's out. It lands on her. The accordion falls to the side and goes, and it's just stuck. And he runs to the bathroom because his toupee slid off.
Oh, so
he's running to the bathroom to reattach.
Oh, my God.
And we're still going. Dum, 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 dum. We're still doing this with her. So anybody that walked in at that point was seeing this David Lynch moment where you have this lady passed out. All shit with his things pressed on, and we're just going on the road.
Yeah.
This is the kind of life I had before this. It was just these amazing strange events that would
these
happen.
Like you said, these little moments.
Yes, the debris, as it were.
Yeah,
yes.
I had one of those moments myself where I went to go see a friend of mine. It was during NAMM a number of years back, and she told me that she was performing at this wine bar. And I don't mind wine or anything like that, but I like to drink it amongst friends, you know, sitting in a circle, you know, kind of a thing. That's when I like to enjoy wine. Other than that, when I go to a bar, give me my rum and Coke, give me my gin or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I walk in. Long story short, she pulls me up on stage to do her last set with her. And I'm just kind of like improvising, soloing behind her in between her verses and what have you and everything. And she's trying to figure out what song to play next. And this lady I noticed over to my left was at this table. It's one of these round tables that sit very high.
Yeah.
You know, okay. And she is just starting to nod off, just, you know, and picking herself up and heads going back and coming back up, waking herself up. And she's just ready to fall asleep and fall off the bar stool. And out of nowhere, I just started to play Sweet Home Alabama. And I get to that dun, 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 dun. And all of a sudden, she woke up. As if somebody gave her a shot of caffeine and goes, oh, that's my song, you know, and just like, sorry, lady, that's all I know. And I left it there. He's like, you're kidding. I'm like, nope, that's all I know. The whole song.
I don't know the whole thing.
And oh, my God, she just like woke up out of nowhere. You know, oh my God.
The ironic thing is that's the only thing there is in that song.
And yeah, exactly. It's three chords. That's it. An occasional left, chords, and that's it.
They're banjo chords.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There's been a lot.
Yeah, there definitely is. Mark, first, thank you so much for coming back on, man, and talking about your new album. It's just a great, great Celluloid Debris, such a great album. Please go out and get it. You can only get it at markbeniamusic.com. And make sure you go to his gallery section on there, too, and look for Sorted Archives, because you will definitely enjoy the young, strapping young buck of Mark Bonilla there.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got so many other pictures there, too. Everybody from Montrose to Boys Club, Toy Matinee with Kevin Gilbert, Edgar Winter, Derek Smalls, CTA, and of course, Mark and Brian. And did you vote, by the way, yet? Have you voted for them yet?
Yes, of course I did.
All right. You told everybody else to.
I did. Yes, I did. Well, yeah. No, I totally did.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And you've got some gigs coming up pretty soon, or?
Yeah, I'm actually playing on the 28th of this month at Bogey's with Tin Drum, which is Burley Drummond and Mary, his wife is in there. Luis Conte is in there. There's a lot of, great stuff. I'm actually shedding that stuff now because I have to memorize like 15 songs. And then there's will probably be some shows with Edgar Winter in November. I've got Derek Smalls. We're planning some stuff now with Harry Shearer, and hopefully that'll come to pass soon.
Cool. And all those dates are going to be up on your website as
well. They're all in the website. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because right now I'm just looking at the one here at Westlake Village, which is Bogey's.
That's coming up. That's the next one coming up.
Yeah. And then you got the Canyon also coming up August 30th though. Yeah. In Agoura Hills. So
yes, with CTA. Yeah.
CTA. Okay. On that
great
one.
Band. You haven't seen that.
Awesome.
Great band.
Brother, it is good to see you.
Good to see you too, man.
And great job on this album. This is phenomenal.
Thanks.
And hopefully this does really, really well for you.
Yeah. And, well, like I said, I'm so glad that I finally got it out there. You know, people are very happy. They finally got some new stuff to listen to. You can put the other two away for a minute, you know, and do this. So, no, I'm very, very happy with it. So,
cool.
You know, let's hope it does well.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming back. I really appreciate it. And we definitely still got to get down together, you and I, at some point, because I know how busy you are, and have some chilaquiles and some huevos con chorizo.
Oh, I'm in.
I got to tell you this, though, real quick before you go.
Yeah.
My son is now eating taquitos from Cito Lindo's down on Alvera Street.
Is that right?
That is like his favorite place to go now. Yeah. He goes, Dad, can we go to Olive Street and have those taquitos? And then he forgets how far it is from Cypress to get to downtown LA.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, well, but I'm like, dude, let's go.
My son is hip on the bean dip at Los Torres Hermanos over in off of, it's in Sylmar.
Wow.
It's great over there. So, you know, because our Ico Iris closed in Glendale, or in Pasadena, the great, it's been there for years.
Yeah.
And So I've been kind of like a heroin addict trying to find the next fix, you know, because I was like,
come on,
you can only sell by the beans. If the beans don't rock, forget it.
That's very true.
It's like the beans have got to rock. Otherwise,
you got to taste the lard in there.
Yes, exactly, because that's how my abuela made them. So, you know.
Well, in that case, dude, we got to get together then have dinner at one of our favorite Mexican restaurants.
That sounds good. I'm down for that, brother.
All right. I'll buy first round.
Okay.
So that way it's guaranteed.
All right. That sounds good. Maybe we'll jam on Sweet Home Alabama. We get drunk it up.
Yeah, definitely. Mark, thanks again, buddy.
Oh, wait, man. Thanks, you guys.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
We'll do it, buddy. Take care. Bye-bye. Right.
Take it easy, Mark.
All right. Oh, such a good interview with Mark, man. And Steve, you asked way too many questions on that interview, man.
I was just listening. It's like, you know, I thought of things, but I go, I can't make this better.
I'll just let Sean down the road.
I have nothing.
Oh, but no, if you haven't had a chance to truly hear it, dude, I mean, I've been listening to it all week, and it is so, so good. Like I said, there's guitar instrumental people out there, you know, like Steve I, and they're great. Don't get me wrong. This album just takes you to a whole new place.
It's so different. Yeah.
I was really blown away, you know, and I've got other friends, you know, like I said, Neil Zaza, I've known for a number of years, and Andy Timmons from Danger Danger. He's done his own solo thing. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, he did an album where he recreated Sgt. Pepper, but it was all instrumental. You know,
oh wow,
yeah, and it was good. It was good, you know. But fuck, Mark took this thing and just he fucking raised the bar, you know, on this whole thing. It's really really good. So please go out and get this album because he needs a new car. Like I said, I've seen his car. I've loaded his amp in his car.
Buy my CD. I can get me a Porsche.
Yeah. Go to markbeniamusic.com. Cellular Debris. Great freaking album on this whole thing. So. Once again, this is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. And what were you, Steve?
I was in Champaign, Illinois.
No shit.
Yeah, in a house at 609 Green Street.
Do you still remember the address?
I remember the address. I lived in the basement. And the family said, come up. And we went up and we watched it live as it happened. It was like, it was really cool. I really liked it. I always remember that Walter Cronkite was like, it's like he didn't have words for a little bit. He was just like, wow.
Yeah.
That had actually happened.
Unfortunately, that was the 1 year before I was born, so I never had a chance to.
So you didn't listen to it?
I didn't listen to it.
You got more excuses.
I was already in the heavens. but I've seen more tragedies than I have accomplishments, though, with certain space things, but not really true, but. But I mean, it's one of those events again that people ask you, where were you when that happened? Mm-hmm. You know, and neither. Yeah, everybody was crowded around their TV or they're on the floor watching it, you know, or something, you know, and it's just one of those events. And I don't see how these people who are non-believers go, oh, it was done on a soundstage.
Because they want attention.
They didn't have the fucking technology to do those type of effects that they do now.
They don't care about the truth. They care about just saying these general statements like the flat earthers, everything, just in case one day somebody goes, wait a minute, then they could be right about something outrageous, you know, because they don't care what the truth is. They don't care about that. Being associated with it is not exciting.
Yeah. And so we've got to keep, I think I've already got it queued up to a certain point. So can we go ahead and play the landing there, Zach?
Houston, this is Neil, radio check. Neil, this is Houston, loud and clear. Break. Buzz, this is Houston. Radio check and verify TV circuit breaker in.
There's that beep.
Yeah.
It was in Mark and Brian's
time. Your TV circuit breaker's in. And page 5 clear. Roger.
I mean, how riveting.
And we're getting a picture
was
on the TV.
Was it to watch it?
TV. You got a good picture, huh? There's a great deal of contrast in it, and currently it's upside down on our monitor, but we can make out a fair amount of detail.
It's like Mark and Brian again.
Exactly.
It's like we got a problem with the picture, Houston. It's upside down.
Astronaut Brian.
Okay, would you verify the position the opening I ought to have on the camera?
Bear me.
Stand what?
There's that foot coming down.
There he is. Yeah. There's a foot coming down the steps.
God.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. Neil, we can see you coming.
Can you put it up at the big screen, Zach?
Okay, I just checked. Getting back up to that first step. That hasn't collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up. Roger, we copy. Pretty good little jump.
So there's a foot on the moon, stepping down on the moon. If he's testing that first step, he must be stepping down on the moon at this point.
Buzz, this is Houston. F2, I'm at the 1/160th second for shadow photography on the sequence camera. Okay. I'm at the foot of the ladder. The LAM footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine.
Boy, look at those pictures. Wow. It's a little shadowy, but he said he expected that in the shadow of the lunar module. Armstrong is on the moon. Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon on this July 20th, 1969.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And not a soundstage.
It would have looked better.
I think that was
yeah,
real
exactly. We would have had better pictures.
Small step for man, but I didn't get the second phrase.
All right, go ahead.
Some one of our monitors here.
Just absolutely amazing. You know, you were talking about the non-believers and mm-hmm. stuff. Did you hear that Buzz Aldrin knocked out a guy?
Or hit I saw that.
Did you see it?
I saw it.
Did you see it, Zach?
That.
I did not.
Pull it out.
He tried to get away from the guy. He tried just like, no, and he was like, you know, go
in
away.
In his face. Tried, swear on the Bible, you know.
Finally, it just went, yeah, I've had enough of you.
Yeah, Buzz Aldrin hits.
It was pretty amazing.
Shit's on YouTube.
Do, 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 do.
Scroll down.
Do, 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 do.
Do, I'm working do, on it. Yeah, I don't see it.
No, well.
But definitely look for look up Buzz Aldrin. You know, hits somebody or whatever, and he just clocked the guy though, and I'm like, yeah, gave the guy a bloody nose and everything too, and it was just awesome. I'm like, hey, that old man's still powerful. You know, he's trained, and he. Ooh, it was good.
The look on the guy's face afterward, he was like, somebody
yeah.
is just...
you know what it reminded me of, though? Was the movie Die Hard, where the news guy or whatever is like,
oh, yeah.
Did you get that?
Did you get that?
that's what that look was to me. Like,
yeah.
Did you get that? Oh, God, it was so good. It was so good. So, well, last thing for today we're going to give you is... Not only is it the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, but it's also National Lollipop Day.
Good Lord.
Hey. Wait, what do you mean, good Lord? You know?
National everything. National Press a Button Day. National Tire Shoe Day. National Spit.
Hey, next week it might be National Producer Day, so shut the hell up.
Probably will be.
Well, got a couple of fun facts here for you while we play this song. Ancient Africa and Asian societies created fruit and nut treats, and they candied it in honey, which acted as a natural preserve, and they inserted a stick into the treats to make it easier to eat. Wow. Lollipops were also known and loved today. They began to emerge in the 17th century as sugar became more widely affordable and available. Europeans enjoyed creating boiled sugar confections, and they also inserted sticks to keep the treats from getting their hands sticky. Yeah. In 1908, the first lollipop machine was created. Nope. 2,000 lollipops. I'm just trying to time this with a song here.
I'm not supposed to have a sheet of paper.
No.
I suddenly went, whoa.
I know, I'm pointing at you. No, it automated the process of placing hard candy on sticks, and she could create more than 2,000 lollipops every hour.
That's a lot of
lollipops. That was in 1908. Tootsie Roll is the largest manufacturer of lollipops. They produce over 16 million sweet suckers every single day.
How many licks does it take to get to the center?
A lot. George Smith, a Connecticut sweets maker, put a caramel and chocolate confection on a stick, and the idea came to him. He began to manufacture a hard candy version and named it Lollipop.
Pop, lollipop.
Yeah. The world's...
See where he's going with this?
The largest lollipop was made in 2012. The confection behind the job was See's Candy here in California, and their creation weighed over 7,000 pounds.
I love See's Candy.
Ooh, I like it.
So there you go. Just a few fun facts of lollipops for Lollipop Day.
Lollipop. Oh, before we end, I just got a funny post from my friend Lisa Noro.
Yeah.
Actually, married the...
brain surgeon.
Veteran. Brain surgeon for animals.
Right.
Anyway, she's...
He's still a brain surgeon, though.
Wherever we... She is. She's at a restaurant called Seabird's Kitchen. And there's a sign, I guess, in the bathroom that says, this is really cool, please don't flush your things down the toilet. This includes tampons, pads, nail polish, scrunchies, jewelry, self-respect, wisdom, and strength.
Wow.
Thank you kindly.
And there you go, folks.
Word of advice.
Yes. Well, we want to thank again, I guess, our guest, Mark Bonilla. Let's give us a little bit of insight about his brand new album, Celluloid Debris. Again, such a great, great album. You know, could talk about it for days. So, next week, guess where we're at?
Orange County.
Where?
Orange County Fair.
You're too slow.
Yeah. Good thing we're not playing the game. I would have swooped you.
I'd rather be a little slow than premature.
It's fair time.
That's true. Yeah, okay. All right.
I'm going to put steam on the moon.
Hey.
Steve on the moon.
Astronaut Steve. Beer him.
Oh, my God. We had so many beers last week, too. We still got to talk about that, too, our Mooney and the Trains from last week.
Yeah.
There was a video on that, too, on our Facebook page.
It's made its rounds on Facebook. Yeah,
yeah, which is good. Anyway, all right, guys, listen, go out there, enjoy this weekend. It's a beautiful day out there. And if you get a chance to go up to the Museum of Science and Industry, they got a great thing going on with the Apollo 11 landing and everything. It's like a 4D kind of thing, I believe, going on. So check it out, and come and see us at the Orange County Fair next week. If you're in town, swing on by. We'll tell you where we're at through Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff. Which, in the meantime, find us on Facebook at Your Weekly Dose. Twitter is Your Weekly Dose 1.
You can find me at Twitter at SilvaLining69.
Find me on Instagram. I am Zombie Mel Gibson. Yes, I changed it. It is now Zombie Mel Gibson.
I like that. That makes you stand out, bud.
It does.
Wow.
And same thing with Twitter, Zombie Mel Gibson.
And if you want to follow me, Sean, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, I made it easy for everybody. It's simply Sean Roberts, HC. And in the meantime, go out. Get Celluloid Debris from MarkBonillaMusic.com. Definitely a good thing to listen to. Like I said, there's something there for everybody. You got rock songs, big instrumentals, orchestral kind of things, and even a couple of songs to make love to. Yeah. Light a couple candles. We got it going on. All right, guys. We will see you guys next week at the Orange County Fair. In the meantime, be good to each other.
Hey, listen to music out there, world.
Tang me.
Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone messing. Yeah. Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the pond? Andy, are you goofing on L's?
Thank you for listening to this week's show.
Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.